Thank you very much for joining us today. Let's get started. Today we're going to talk about opportunities in the Middle East and North Africa. I am one of the co-hosts today. My name is Carlene Velez, and I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist at the International Institute of International Education. I'm joined by my colleague.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jumana Kamal, and I am the program officer for Middle East and North Africa.
Just to give you an overview of today's session, we'll begin by taking you through the what's new in the Middle East and North Africa. We will also go through some of the awards, and at the end, we will navigate the awards catalog and help you understand how it works. Finally, feel free to type any questions that you have as we go through in the questions box, and we will try to leave the last 30 minutes for questions and answers. First and foremost, I would like to talk to you about Fulbright. The mission of the Fulbright is to provide opportunities for faculty, administrators, academics, and other professionals to teach and conduct research around the world. This is the United States government's flagship international exchange program, and we are very proud that it has been in existence since 1946. Our mission is to foster mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. And that cultural piece that is inherent in the Fulbright program is very important to our mission. Diversity and inclusion is at the heart of the Fulbright program. Not only do we promote people from all areas of society, promote them and encourage them to apply to our program, we actively recruit throughout the United States at institutions that are minority-serving institutions and working with people with disabilities or any other group that might be underrepresented. So please know that this is a core mission of ours, and we encourage all people to apply to our program. We would like the program to actually represent the diversity of America, and that is what we continue to work towards. A little bit about Fulbright, just Fulbright by the numbers. It's really wonderful because we provide over 8,000 awards annually. And if you look at the list, we support U.S. students going abroad, foreign students studying for graduate school here in the U.S., U.S. scholars and administrators going abroad, visiting scholars coming here, and language teaching assistants. We have about 800 opportunities worldwide for U.S. scholars and administrators. So if you're listening today, we would love for one of those 800 to belong to you. There are a wonderful amount of opportunities available. Overall, we've had about 390,000 Fulbrighters who participated in the program since its inception. The distribution of awards. Fulbright awards allow academics and professionals to participate in a wide variety of activities. And as we go through the awards later on, you'll see which activities are available for the countries of interest to you. But we give out awards in teaching research combinations. We also have a wide variety of postdocs and seminars for international education administrators to participate in. This distribution varies year by year, but what I would like you to know is that depending on what it is you want to do, you can apply to work on that activity when you are abroad. For the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, the one eligibility requirement that we emphasize today is that for the U.S. Scholar Program, U.S. citizenship is required. Unfortunately, permanent residence is not enough. You do have to be a U.S. citizen. But once you naturalize, if you are in the resident state, then you're automatically eligible to apply for a Fulbright. After that, everything depends. So the type of degree that you need depends on the award. Your expertise or years of experience also depend on the award. And throughout this webinar, we will teach you how to navigate that information on the website. So getting back to the MENA region, some program highlights is that we have opportunities in 13 countries represented from Morocco to Oman. We have 35 unique award offerings in the region with over 50 grants given out annually. There's also a flex option for multiple visits to a country over a short period of time. And if you look at the quote on the screen right here from a Fulbright scholar to the West Bank. You can see that the opportunity was personally and professionally enriching and empowering. And I think if you talk to any Fulbright alumni, they will have the same experience. Okay, let's look at a few regional highlights. What I would love to point out is that the All Disciplines Award, which is basically open to a wide variety of people, is available in almost every country in this region. So no matter if you are an artist or a scientist or maybe a social scientist, if you are interested in going to Tunisia or to Bahrain, the All Disciplines Award will catch you all. And I think that's a very exciting thing to know about because it does indicate that there's a great deal of flexibility within the region. Then we have some awards that are specific to disciplines. So for example, Egypt has an award specifically for artists, performing and visual artists. But the artist can also apply to the All Disciplines Award. So I think you see how it works, that there is a specific award, but these disciplines can also go to the All Disciplines Award. Business and economics, Bahrain and Egypt have two awards that are in those fields. Palestinian Territories and West Bank, they have a new Journalism Media Award, which is very exciting. If you are a postdoc or an early career scholar, and we'll get into the definition of early career in a bit, we have opportunities in Israel and Qatar. If you are in the STEM fields, you can look at the unique awards by discipline in Egypt and Qatar. And if you are in the area of TEFL, Applied Linguistics, or Education, Algeria, Bahrain, and Jordan have specific discipline opportunities in those areas. Okay, so let's start by looking at the four countries in North Africa that participate in the Fulbright program. The first is Algeria. Algeria has two awards, the All Disciplines Award and the TEFL and Applied Linguistics Award. This country is open to research, teaching, or a teaching research combination. And many people ask, which one should I select? Which one is the most competitive? And the wonderful thing about a country that is open to all three of those activity types is that you can actually select the one that matches your professional portfolio the best. One area is not more competitive than the other. The stronger candidate, you will be a strong candidate if you match your experience and expertise with the activity type that you're actually selecting. So for the All Disciplines Award to Algeria, they are open to everything, but they have a particular preference for agriculture, American history, American civilization, American literature, American studies. So again, wanting that cross-cultural piece to come across. Biological sciences, computer sciences, creative writing, engineering, environmental sciences, mathematics, and then music, including woodwind instruments, string instruments, and vocal disciplines. So Algeria is quite broad in what it is they're open to, so that's an award to look at. If you are in the field of education, the TEFL and Applied Linguistics Award, of course, is going to be a great choice for you. In this region, there are a lot of requests for people in TEFL. So if that is your discipline, then you are in luck because there are many opportunities in this region for you. Moving on to Egypt. Egypt has two All Disciplines Awards. The first award, All Disciplines Award, can be to institutions, a variety of institutions in Egypt. You have a little bit more opportunity to select the institution that's appropriate. The second All Disciplines Award is affiliated with the American University of Cairo. If you apply to that award, then that is the institution that you are asking to be affiliated with. There's also an award in business administration and in the sciences to Egypt. And finally, visual and performing arts. Moving on to Morocco. Morocco, again, is one of those all-discipline catch-all categories and awards. The thing to keep in mind with Morocco is that as part of a clearance process, you do have to present a one-page summary of your project translated into Arabic or French. And we can give you more details about that later on. But just keeping in mind, even if you don't speak Arabic or French and you do want to apply to Morocco, you would have to work with a translator to get your one-page summary translated as one piece of your application. Next, Tunisia is also open to all disciplines. Now I'm going to turn it over to Jumana just to say a little bit about what the process looks like to receive clearance for the awards to, in this case, North Africa, but the same can apply to Middle East.
Thank you, Carlene. So basically, various countries have different processes where they request additional information from the semifinalists about their proposals. It could be in Arabic or French for the French-speaking countries as well. So one of the countries that might request additional information once you're a semifinalist would be Egypt. As Carlene mentioned, Morocco currently requires additional information as a one-pager summary to be submitted along with your application. The UAE may request that you fill out a personal information sheet by way of the U.S. Embassy. In general, keep in mind the diplomatic component of the award. Fulbright is a cultural exchange program after all, so it, you know, keep in mind improving intercultural relations with the people of the host country and the grantees. You're basically, once you're a grantee, you are acting as an ambassador. So we encourage you to present project statements and titles in a positive light and be mindful of sensitive topics. Overall, just keep in mind the geopolitical dynamics within MENA when thinking about your topic and how it might be received.
Thank you, Jumana. Okay, let's look at some of the awards next in the Gulf. These awards are all disciplines awards, so I am going to talk about them and just know that for most of the people on the call, these awards can apply to you. Let's start off with Bahrain. This opportunity is wonderful because it's a 10-month opportunity, and the hosts are identified in the award description, so that helps you figure out where you might want to conduct your research. Because this award is 10 months, it allows you to really immerse yourself into the culture and have a significant amount of impact while you are there. Next is Jordan. Jordan has 5 to 10-month opportunities. And there is a list of preferred disciplines in the award description. When you see the preferred disciplines, this is like a wish list that the country has. It's not saying that you're ineligible if you don't fall into one of those preferred disciplines. It just means that it is their preference. If your discipline does fit within that preference list, then that means that you're a good match for the award. Moving on to Kuwait. Kuwait, the opportunities are for 4 to 9 months, so you do have a little bit of flexibility there. And there also is a flex option. Just to define the flex option a bit, again, as we said in the beginning, it is an award that allows you to make multiple trips back to that host country. So you might want to go to Kuwait for 2 different segments of time, maybe 2 months here and 2 months there, and do them 1 year apart. The flex grants usually take place over 2 academic years, but again, you would need to read the award description for the specific details. Even though Kuwait calls itself an all disciplines award, they do request that scholars come from a specific field, come from specific fields listed in the award description, so please do refer to that. The next award is to Oman. This award can be 3 to 10 months in length, and again, this one also has some pre-identified host institutions. This is actually a really wonderful thing that they are listed there, because then it helps you find a host that might have a department in your discipline and secure that invitation letter, which is a component of the application for most of these countries. Moving on to Palestinian Territories West Bank. These opportunities are 5 to 10 months, again at pre-identified hosts. In this specific region, there are certain places you can and can't go, so you do want to pay attention to that list. And in the Palestinian Territories West Bank, the flex option is available. Next, moving on to Qatar, there are 5 to 10 month opportunities, also at pre-identified host institutions. Saudi Arabia, you can go for 3 to 10 months, also at pre-identified host institutions, and the flex option is available. Finally, at the United Arab Emirates, you have the 3 to 10 month option for your grant award, and the flex option is available. So please, if you have questions about these, refer to the specific award in the award catalog, and I will, again, navigate you there in a bit. Moving on, I want to introduce some senior scholar opportunities. Sometimes they're called distinguished chair, but in Israel, which is where these opportunities are located in the MENA region, they're called senior scholar opportunities. So as you can see, we have 5 different senior scholar awards listed that are in all disciplines, which means there's flexibility in the topics that you might choose. One of them is a general all disciplines award, and 4 of them are tied specifically with host institutions. So as a scholar, when you're applying, if you want to work at Hebrew University, you will have to decide whether to apply through the specific Hebrew University award or apply through the general all disciplines award. And if you need to, some suggestions about which one might be a better fit for your professional profile, please do reach out to us. The one thing to keep in mind, and this is something that is quite unique to Israel, is that if you are applying to the general all disciplines senior scholar fellowship, the institutions need to indicate in their invitation letter that they would be willing to make a $2,000 contribution to the Fulbright program if their recommended candidate receives an award. So as you are discussing possible collaborative work with a host institution, this is part of the conversation that you would need to bring up. In the case of the sponsored awards, the sponsorship agreements have already been secured, so this $2,000 contribution is not necessary for the other 4 awards. Now let's look at a couple postdoctoral opportunities. For the postdoc candidates, let's start in Israel. There are 4 different opportunities in Israel. 1 is a general postdoctoral award, and 3 are awards that are in conjunction with specific institutions. The amazing thing about the postdoc awards to Israel is that they can be 1 to 2 academic years in length, so they're really quite generous opportunities. If you are a postdoc in the STEM field, you would want to get the letter of invitation from one of the universities in Israel that talk about their desire to work with you. So not only in the STEM fields, but actually in all of the fields. This letter of invitation is very important because what that does is it communicates to the Fulbright Commission in Israel that you have a desire or an interest in working with an applicant. And so you do want to make sure that that invitation letter is really a clear outline of the agreement and how you guys might contribute to each other's work in that process. If you are a postdoc in the humanities and social sciences, again, that invitation letter should clearly outline what it is you plan on doing with them and how you would be doing that work together. And finally, postdoc candidates in the arts, people in the arts are actually very welcome in all of these postdoctoral opportunities. Israel is welcoming of artists, so if you are an artist listening in today, please be encouraged to apply to one of these opportunities in Israel. Just so that you know, there are a few restrictions with these Israel awards. First, if you are a candidate who has already begun postdoc work in Israel, you are not eligible to apply for these awards. Also, they are accepting people who got their PhD no earlier than August of 2016. So if you happen to be an assistant professor and you have the opportunity to take a junior leave and you filed your PhD after August 2016, you can still apply for a postdoc award, and that might be a very strategic move to make because you'll be competing with a pool of only people who've graduated within the last 5 years. And if you are still in graduate school right now and you're hoping to file your dissertation, Israel also has a restriction that you have to file your dissertation before your grant begins. So you would have up until your proposed grant start date to file your dissertation. Let's look at the second postdoc opportunity. It's the Postdoctoral Fellowship in Water, Energy, and the Environment at HBKU in Qatar. This is 4 to 12 months in length. It allows you to have the flex option, which is unique for this postdoc opportunity, but you can go back in a couple segments. And you would actually be working with the Qatar Environment and Energy Research Institute at the Doha-based Hamid bin Khalifa University, HBKU. The most unique thing about this grant is that it came about to support the statement of intent signed by NASA and JPL and HBKU. So you will want to look at that award description to see the interesting work that you can do in this award. Finally, we're going to talk about a couple multi-country awards. There are two in the MENA region. The first one is called the Middle East and North Africa Regional Research Program. It allows you to visit two or more countries in the MENA region. It is 3 to 9 months in length with the flex option available. And the invitation requirements for this award differ by country, so you would need to refer to the award description for the specific details. The second one is the Morocco-Spain Joint Award. And in this, invitations are required from both Morocco and Spain. This award is 6 to 10 months in length, and they do specify that a minimum of 40% time must be spent in each country. So again, the invitation letters are required, and English is sufficient for this award as long as the feasibility of conducting your project is demonstrated in your project statement. Just to give you a little bit of information about the features and requirements, first, English is generally sufficient. Again, going back to what we said the last slide, feasibility of conducting your project in English, though, must be demonstrated in your project statement. Arabic, French, or local dialects can be helpful. So know that you do not necessarily need the local language, but it can be helpful. And then finally, in the MENA region, there's a regional travel program, and this allows the grantees to travel to another country in the region to attend a conference, workshop, or give a lecture. No research, you can't conduct research during that time. But to participate in the program, you must be invited by a host in another MENA country, and they are expected to cost share as part of this program. Now let me take you on a small tour of the awards catalog. So right here, if you go to awards.cies.org, you can browse the awards catalog. And the awards catalog looks like this. So if you go, you could either search by Middle East and North Africa, or you could go over here and you could search by a specific country. So if we were interested in going to Bahrain, then you might want to look at the awards just in that particular region. So if I click on this one, Educational Administration and Teacher Education, I just want to point out that there are four tabs, and each tab is really very important. The first one, the award details, again, talks about all of those specifics, how long it is, when the grant can begin, where you can be located, whether the flex option is available, and what discipline types are acceptable. So in this case, the disciplines are education, linguistics, or TEFL. Those are the ones that are acceptable. This far right column also tells you what activity you can participate in while you are there, what degree requirement is necessary, and what candidate profile is necessary. It tells the number of awards, and then it'll list my name as the contact for the specific award. The second tab, the awards requirement tab, this is important because it talks about the invitation. So in this case, an invitation should not be sought. This is actually wonderful if you don't have contacts in the region, but you're still interested in going and learning about the region. You can actually apply, and they will help you find an appropriate placement within the country. It also talks about language proficiency requirement. And again, these differ by award, so please do look at the specific award to which you are applying. And then any additional information about the requirements will be listed over here. This third tab, this is a stipend and benefits tab. This is really important to see what type of financial assistance you might receive as you try to imagine applying for a specific award. So in this case, you can see that the amount of financial amount of stipend you receive depends on your actual level in your job. You have a list of any travel and relocation amount, any research allowances, and then also not everyone, but many of the awards in the Middle East and North Africa area also provide dependent tuition allowance, which is for children who are generally in kindergarten or first grade through 12th grade. So please look at that if you are considering taking your dependents with you. And then finally, you have the country and area overview up in the front. And this will give you a little bit more information about the context in the country. Once you receive all of that information, you can just click over here to begin the application process, and it'll give you all of the information you need, the application, the review criteria, the timeline, and whatnot. I'm going to go one more time back to the homepage, CIES.org, because there's one more thing I wanted to point out. If you look here on this main page, there is the Fulbright Scholar Directory. This directory lists all past grantees from the last 10 years by discipline and by country. And so if you are considering applying for an award to, for example, let me over here, program country, I might have Tunisia. So you could click in that program country and then search. And what happens is people who have received awards to Tunisia or from Tunisia are all listed over here. And what this allows you to do is to start networking, possibly with people who are from a specific institution you might like to work at, or if you're looking at U.S. scholars who went to Tunisia, you might want to talk to somebody, sorry, when it says non-U.S. visiting scholar, those are people who came from Tunisia, but let's say you're interested in writing a proposal in business administration to Tunisia, you might consider reaching out to this scholar and talking to them about their experience on a business administration award to Tunisia. So the scholar directory is a wealth of information that can help you as you're preparing for your award. I'm going to move back over to the PowerPoint presentation now. What I'd like to also point out is the application cycle. The deadline is September 15th, and from that point on, we start to conduct our reviews. So September, October, November, that's when we do all of the internal reviews and the U.S.-based peer review, which takes place in committees that are separated by discipline. So you, if you are applying in the arts, your application will be reviewed by an arts committee. Then from November to January, we forward the information to the host countries, and they conduct their own internal review. We here at IIE do not have access to their conversations, but what happens after their review is they send us a list of the awards that they would like to fund, and then the awards get approved by the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. And then after that approval takes place, we would let people know if they actually have received an award. So when you apply on September 15th, you probably won't hear anything again until January to April about whether you have received an award. So the process might be longer than you expected, but please know that every step of the way, we are working hard to make sure that you have a fair evaluation of your work. The final slide that I have right now is just one to encourage you to keep in touch with us. This very top part where it says Join My Fulbright, that is a place where you can register your interest. If you go to CIES2.org, you can put in, make a profile that says that you're interested in opportunities in the Middle East or interested in opportunities in business in Jordan. You can be as general or specific as you want. And then if updates or information come available, we will send emails out to you, but only on those particular things. So what I would like to do right now is open it up to questions. I see that there are a lot of questions in the box. So Jumana and I are going to take some time to answer the questions. And if you haven't input a question in the question box, please feel free to do so now. Okay. Someone asked a question about, is this being recorded? I'll not be able to attend the webinar altogether. But yes, it will be recorded, and we'll send an email out as soon as it is posted online. Okay. How important is it to know Arabic first? Jumana, can you address that one, please?
Sure. Again, this is country-specific. Most of the countries, almost all of the countries, do not require Arabic, as long as you can demonstrate feasibility of your project in English. Certainly, Arabic does help, you know, just day-to-day functioning in the country. But not necessarily required. So if you have any specific questions about what country you're interested in, we can provide more information.
Okay, thank you. There is another question. I've emailed the contact people listed on some of the awards, for example, to Oman, as well as emailing individual departments in my field, and no one replies. This leads me to believe that I should move on to another country. Do you have any thoughts about that one, of contacting people abroad?
I would encourage anybody who does not hear back to reach out to Carlene and me, and we can definitely look into it. You know, sometimes various countries have various holiday schedules. They're a little bit backed up, whatever the case may be. So we encourage you to reach out to us, and we'll do our best to follow up with them.
And I do want to also add that if you're thinking of making the contacts right now in February, you're actually in a very good position, because we have enough time to be able to help provide support to you, as opposed to getting this question a week before the award deadline. So please do reach out to us. Okay, the next one. Can Palestinians or U.S. citizens of Palestinian descent apply for any of the Israel programs? Jumana.
Yes, absolutely. If you're a U.S. citizen, you are welcome to apply to any grant.
Okay, thank you. The next question right here, is it possible to acquire language training during the Fulbright Award? Jumana?
You may be able to do that on your own, but it's not part of the grant, as long as it doesn't get in the way of your grant responsibilities.
Okay. Thank you. The next question right here, and please keep your questions coming right here. What is the range of acceptance rate for applicants to MENA countries? I can actually answer that one. You know, it differs from year to year, so we're not really able to provide a number of how many awards, how many people apply, how many awards are given, because it does change so much. But what we do encourage everyone to do is to try to make sure when you are applying that you are the best match possible for that award. So if they're asking for people in the humanities and you are a science person, that might not be a good match. But if you're applying to an art award and you are an artist, that is a good match. So just please reach out if you have questions about fit or eligibility, and we'd be happy to answer those questions. The next question, can we get a copy of the catalog presentation? The good thing is that this is going to be archived online, and the slides will all have links taking you to the appropriate awards. And so please wait, and within a week we will have this posted online. The next one, is a PhD or doctorate required? I have a bachelor's degree in humanity, and I have started a foundation and have a 501c3 status, okay? For this particular applicant who is a professional, please email us the award you're interested in, and we can answer that question better. Some awards are open to professionals or people who are established in their fields, and other awards require a PhD. This is not something that we control. This is something that is agreed upon between the host institution or the host country and the Fulbright program. So please reach out, because there are many opportunities for professionals. If not in this catalog, in some other world regions there might be. The next one, in Morocco, will I be teaching and researching in English, or am I required to do it in another language?
In Morocco, again, English is pretty much sufficient, but it does depend on topic, and it does depend on a host institution. So there are a lot of depends, but generally English is sufficient.
Okay, here's another one. This, I think, can apply to all of the countries. Someone said, can I apply to Algeria knowing that this is my home country?
As long as you are a U.S. citizen, you are welcome to apply to your heritage, to your country of origin.
Okay.
Oh, and just to mention, you did mention, Carlene, earlier about the 5 years of having spent a lot of time in country.
We actually have not. That's a good point to bring up. The only restriction is if you're living abroad, to be eligible, one of the eligibility guidelines to apply for a Fulbright is that you cannot have lived overseas for more than 5 of the last 6 years. So on the application, they will confirm where you live. So most people are based in the U.S. when they apply, but there is that rule where you cannot have lived overseas for more than 5 of the last 6 years to be eligible. Okay, thank you. Is there a place to view previous approved applicants' proposals just to get an idea of what exactly is expected? We do have some samples on our website of snippets or pieces of past proposals to give you an idea. You're also welcome to reach out to scholars in our directory to see if anyone might be willing to share one. But the proposals do really vary applicant to applicant. So my best piece of advice is to go to the website and look at the application guidelines, and you can see some samples and some guiding questions there. The next question, I have an MFA and I'm interested in doing a PhD. I heard we can in conjunction with the Fulbright. Can you share more information about this? Thanks. So this is somewhat of a complicated question. If you have an MFA, you technically have a terminal degree, and you are eligible to apply for some awards that require a PhD or a terminal degree. However, if you are in a PhD program, you might want to look at the Fulbright U.S. student program. They provide funding for dissertation research or graduate students overall. So that one might end up being a better fit for you. But if you have any question about your eligibility and which program might be the best fit, please do reach out to me and ask. It helps if you send your CV, because then I can start looking at that to see eligibility. But do know that if you are in a situation like this where you're an MFA but also pursuing a PhD, you would have to choose to apply to either the student program or the scholar program. You cannot submit an application to both programs in the same application cycle. The next question. Is it possible for students to apply to multiple Fulbright programs? For example, a student interested in Arabic studies who thinks that the studies would be equally successful in Morocco and in Egypt. Okay, no, you can only apply to one program at one time. But remember, today's presentation is about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. If you have questions about the Fulbright U.S. Student Program, you would need to refer to their website or contact your campus representative. Okay, the next one. For the MENA multi-country grants, are start dates also flexible? What about the Senior Scholar Awards in Israel? Do they begin in specified months?
For the MENA multi-country programs, the start dates are flexible as long as you start and end within 2 years of the date of the start, like the official start for the fiscal year. So typically, like if you apply and you get a grant, the starting dates are fall of that same year. So the grantees who are receiving their grants for this year typically start September 1st. You can start anytime after September 1st up to 2 years, to complete those multi-country grants by 2 years. For the Senior Scholar Award, those are typically flexible as well, but it depends on the host institution. So, because there are like multiple Senior Scholar Awards, you would have to refer to the specifics in each award, and they would mention if they have a specific start date, but typically there is some flexibility in Israel.
Thank you, Jumana. Here's another question. Do I need a TEFL certificate to teach English in Algeria? When I read this question, my first thought is, are you a student hoping to do an English teaching assistant program abroad, or are you a TEFL professional? If you are a recent graduate and you'd like to go abroad for 1 year to have a teaching experience and teach English in Algeria, then I would encourage you to look at the Fulbright U.S. Student Program website. I do want to note when there are TEFL awards, it is actually not to go and teach English there. It is to provide pedagogy training on teaching English as a foreign language. So it's usually some type of capacity building, some type of training or teacher education that you would be engaging in, and not actual English teaching, unless it's specified in the award, but it's generally the pedagogy training that they're hoping to get. Next, would you share the PowerPoint with us? Okay, yes, that will be posted online, and you'll get an email once it is. The next question, I am a U.S. citizen and interested in the Middle East, Egypt particularly. This is very exciting. Egypt is really trying to build their program, so please reach out with any specific questions. We'd be happy to work with you. When contacting a host institution, is it better to ask what they need or to offer suggestions or project proposals?
I think that's it depends on the award. So depending whether, if you're going to a country like Bahrain, as we mentioned earlier, it's not encouraged to reach out to a host institution. But if it's an award that encourages an invitation letter, then, it depends on a lot of things. It depends on what the disciplines that they're looking for are. It depends on if you have existing communications. So let's talk offline more about what you're thinking about, and we can guide you accordingly.
Okay, the next question. What advice can you provide to a person applying for a second time? Also, if the candidate was able to achieve their proposed project outside of Fulbright funding, is this something the candidate should mention in the application when applying for the second time? This is, a rather specific question, but let me give you a general rule of thumb. Every year we have applicants who did not receive an award 1 year, but received an award the following year. The applicant pool changes every year, so we encourage you to reapply if you made it through or didn't make it through the peer review committee the year before and you're still interested. We at the outreach and recruitment desks are happy to work with you to try to guide you in that application process. Any successes that you have that you want to highlight in your application can work in your benefit as long as it fits in with the project that you are proposing for this current application. The second rule of thumb that we have is if you've applied 2 times in a year to a country and have not received it twice in a row, then you might consider taking the project and modifying it to fit in another country, because we do feel like there's a Fulbright for everyone, but you have to find that right match. So again, feel free to reach out with us and we can talk about it personally. Okay, let's see, the next one. Is a misdemeanor a disqualification for an award?
Good question.
There is a section in the application that does ask about misdemeanors. Those are evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. So my best information is if you'd like to email us specifically and mention what it is, we can check for you, or you can fill out the application, but make sure to divulge that, and then they will process it accordingly. Any information like this that you share does not get shared with your review committee, so when they look at your application, they do look at it, but it is reviewed by the Fulbright office itself. Next question. A few years ago, a Palestinian scholar was prevented from joining the Hebrew University program, so how did the Fulbright program respond? That one, I'm actually not going to address that question right now, but if you have a question, I can try to find out some information and respond offline. So please feel free to contact me. The next one, for the Morocco-Spain Award, do I have to get letters of invitation from both Moroccan and Spanish institutions?
Yes, you do.
And that, again, information is clearly outlined in the award description. So if you have any questions, that's the best place to start, is over in the award description. Okay, I am interested in three regions at once. Can I apply to all three with the same proposal? The only award that allows you to go to multiple world regions is the Fulbright Global Scholars Award. It allows you to go to two different world regions. The only thing to keep in mind with the Fulbright Global Award is that it is by far the most competitive award in the catalog. And so we do encourage people who have a need to be in these different world regions to consider that as an option. Are there any special considerations for early career faculty? If you are an early career faculty member, I mentioned this when we were talking about the postdocs, but I would start looking at them if you fall within the guidelines of having graduated in the last 5 years. It just narrows the pool somewhat to more recent scholars, and so it gives you a very competitive chance. But if an award says that it's open to early career or it's open to all academics, including early career, then please know that you are eligible, and I would encourage you to apply. If you have any questions, we'd also be happy to look at your CV if you send it our way. If I'm in the middle of a research project, would that qualify me to add more contributors to the research from the grant? The grant, your project statements, they can vary person to person. So you might be expanding a research program and want to make contacts abroad. So please reach out if you have specific questions about this, but one of the best things that comes from a Fulbright experience is that scholars build international collaborators, and it's always wonderful when we see scholars who are on Fulbright together from the host and the American institution co-publishing. So please, if you have more questions about that, reach out, but do know that we encourage collaborative research projects, especially that result from a Fulbright experience. All right, let me pull up the next question. If an area is unique or new to a country or institution, is there an advantage during the application process?
I'm not sure what the area is unique means, but
if you're talking about interdisciplinary work, that's often where we see a lot of unique projects come up, projects that blend one discipline to the other, then that one is something that you're more than welcome to propose. If the area is unique or new, it's a little bit uncertain what we mean, so it might be a good idea to send us like a paragraph or two of what you're thinking, not an entire project statement, but give us a paragraph or two, and we can look through and see if that is something that in the matches up well with the award description and help you go through some of the review criteria to see if it would match. Okay, I have an MS in science. How do I know what research projects are accepted in Algeria? With all of these very specific awards, I would just encourage you to email us and we can get that. The email is MiddleEastNorthAfrica@IIE.org, and the Middle Eastern experts will work with you on trying to decide that. Okay. The Morocco ad says that you must speak French or Arabic. Let me just verify. A lot of the countries will also say that English is sufficient if you can provide a justification about how you can conduct your work. So in this case, it looks like the language proficiency is recommended, but again, there's always the caveat about if you have another plan on how you can conduct your research or do your teaching, you can highlight that in the project statement. Okay, someone asked about who is considered early career. Generally, people who got their PhD within the past 5 years, but that can differ slightly country by country, so please refer to the award description. Okay, in some cases, there is one institution-specific award, for example, at Hebrew University, but multiple awards that are not tied to a particular institution. If one applies to the institution-specific award but is not the number one choice, will the host country consider you for the non-institution-specific award, or should one apply to both? Well, first, you cannot apply to both. And that, I think, is therein lies the challenge. You really have to make one selection that you think you're going to be most competitive at. Occasionally people do get transferred internally from one award to the next, but there is never a guarantee. So our rule of thumb is apply to the one award that you want and see how that goes. If there is one award to Hebrew University and you don't want to take the risk that you might be not the number one choice but the number two, you could apply to the more generic all disciplines award. But if that happens, Hebrew University, if you do receive an award, Hebrew University would then be asked to contribute the $2,000 to the Fulbright program for you to be accepted at their institution. So that's the biggest difference, is that with the institution-sponsored award, that financial contribution is not listed as a requirement for the invitation letter, but with the All Disciplines Award, that is required over there. So be very mindful to pick the best award for your professional profile. So someone says, for someone who wasn't successful the first time, do you suggest that they wait some years before applying again and get more experience? That really does depend. We've had people apply 1 year after the next, and we've also had people gain more experience or maybe more publications and apply again. If you want to get our thoughts on it, please feel free to email us your CV. The one thing I can say about experience is do keep in mind that if you are a lecturer at a university and you're applying for a teaching research award, but you don't have many research publications, it might be better to apply again and apply for a teaching-only award rather than the teaching-research combination. So just make sure that whatever it is you're applying for does really match what it is you can support in your professional profile. Okay, this is a question for you, Jumana. The Morocco program refers to a base stipend as well as a monthly living allowance and a monthly housing allowance. Are the two allowances part of or in addition to the base stipend?
The stipend is generally its own amount. And then, you know, there if they're listed specifically under different subtitles, then they are different amounts. So a stipend would be its own amount. I'm just looking over the Morocco stipend right now. It does say that a stipend of a certain amount and then a monthly allowance of a certain amount. So it's separate. They're all three amounts are separate.
Thank you very much. Okay, so here's another question. It says, is there dependent support for flex grants and multiple country grants in MENA?
Dependent support is not offered for flex grants, but it is offered for multiple countries. Again, this is a very specific question. It depends on the country, and if you can email us what you're interested in, we can provide you with more information.
Okay, there's the person who's asking about the PhD program and about the award of Fulbright, please email us separately and we can talk offline about the eligibility for that. I think whenever you are applying for a program, just determining your eligibility is the most crucial aspect or starting point. Okay. There's someone that says, I have a PhD in international education and linguistics and have done ESL and teacher education. I'm interested in teaching English language teachers. Several countries in the region show an interest in TEFL professionals. Do you have any advice on which a country to apply to? That is actually a great question. I would encourage you to email us. Sometimes these specific questions can actually be handled better in email. But if you're trying to narrow it down, we might talk a little bit about what skill set you're bringing to the table. I see you have your PhD in international education, so the International Education Administrator Award comes up as one that could be a possibility, right? But again, the key thing is to try to match your background to what the award description is asking for, including some of those nuances. And one other thing to keep in mind is that one of the review criteria is you making a case or discussing why you need to be in that country for that specific reason. So if you are interested in working in TEFL education in a particular country for a particular reason that might be unique to that country, that will also strengthen your application because it'll really demonstrate why you need to be in that country to do that type of work. You might establish that connection through some of your colleagues in your field of international education or TEFL or through other scholars that you might know. Okay, the direct email, our direct email, I will put it in the chat box if I can. It is Middle East North Africa at IIE.org. Okay, so I'll put it in the chat right here. There you go. That was sent to all of the audience. So Middle East, North Africa at IIE.org. Additionally, if you are in the awards catalog on any of the awards in the MENA region, you will reach this email address, or you can click on a link to get to this email address. Please know that I work very closely with Jumana, so if I don't know the answer to the question, then she will also help me find the answer to the question. Because what we're really here to do is to make sure that we can help as many applicants as possible submit very qualified and very strong applications to the applicant pool. Thank you very much for joining us today. I look forward to working with you throughout the application cycle. We have until September 15th to make sure that your application is as strong as possible, so I would welcome any questions up until that point. Thanks again for joining and have a great day. Goodbye.